I've got a question about the word suicide. But not as it refers to its literal meaning. When I was a little kid, my brother and I would go to a convenience store or a fast food place where you could fill up your own soda. And when you put different types of soda into your glass, that was called a suicide. And I thought that was just something my brother and I said, but I guess it's not. Everybody I know says that. And I was just wondering how that word got attached to doing that.
I think that one of the viruses or memes that's been implanted in our ranks is that there is an enemy people. And whenever you go that way, and I don't go that way, then you're falling into their snare. Because the enemy is not any group of people. The enemy is an ideology. It's a spirit. It's a spiritual ideology. It can affect you. It can infect me. It can infect any nation of people. No one is invulnerable to it.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're going to stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
And I hold her naked body firmly in my hand. And I close my eyes tightly. And I slowly bring her whole closer to my lips. And I could be killed for what I'm thinking. It's beyond human experience. I could be killed for what I'm thinking, drinking cyanide in my dreams. It seems that I'm moving past my past, past elementary school days, past K to the 12th grade, where everybody knew that Boogie Down Productions would always get paid in full like Rakim, at least until Black Radio forgot him. Went rock bottom, fell 12 levels below Sodom, sold out. Well, all the white national radio conglomerates got him strung out. Like my old high school friend who used to wear 3 different leather suits a day and push the dime pieces in the jet black Benz. At least until he saw half his life end getting shot down on the roof of the projects. Now he just shoots up on the roof of the projects. And yet, even he has a longer life expectancy than me, cause I could be killed for what I'm thinking. And I let her hole sit completely on my tongue, and I'm just dying for her to come. I want her whole nine to just ejaculate straight through my mind. I want her to come so hard that she blows off my headpiece so that I might finally have peace in my head. But instead I hear a million ancestors yell that I have no right to have no life. They tell me I am exactly what comes after the ones that survived the middle passage. They tell me I am directly descended from the ones who thought it was punkish to jump ship. The ones who mastered their masters, those angels, those gods who worked hellishly hard from can't see to can't see in the plantation, slaving for the very same Satan that they created. They grafted their own masters. And every night, a million bodies, blacker than cooked soot on the bottom of a crack pipe in a dark corner of the basement of a crack house, when the moon signals midnight, sing to me. They sing that I am the ungrateful realization of their dreams. They sing that I am their social, technologically spoiled offspring. They sing since it took 400 years of misery to bring me here, my suicide is not an acceptable offering. They sing that I was expressly put on this planet to speak dynamite to granite. That I was intended to spit tears into microphones so that billions of disenfranchised black children might find their way back home. And I cry cause I am ashamed that I could be killed for what I'm thinking. And I want her to come so bad, but I manage. I want her to come so bad, but I manage. I want her to come for me so bad, but I manage to pull the gun off of my tongue, turn my thoughts indivisibly in the direction of black youth, and behold, ejaculating out of my throat is the truth.
Yeah. This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Members of the convention, my friends, it is very late tonight, but I have felt that you would rather that I speak to you now than wait until tomorrow. It is with a very full heart that I speak tonight. I must confess that I do so with mixed feelings, because I find myself, as almost everyone does, sooner or later in his lifetime, in a conflict between deep personal desire for retirement on the one hand, and that quiet, invisible thing called conscience on the other. Because there are self-appointed commentators and interpreters who will seek to misinterpret or question motives, I speak in a somewhat personal vein, and I must trust to the good faith and common sense of the American people to accept my own good faith and to do their own interpreting. When, in 1936, I was chosen by the voters for a second time as president, it was my firm intention to turn over the responsibilities of government to other hands at the end of my term. That conviction remained with me. 8 years in the presidency, following a period of bleak depression and covering one world crisis after another, would normally entitle any man to the relaxation which comes from honorable retirement. During the spring of 1939, world events made it clear to all but the blind or the partisan that a great war in Europe had become not merely a possibility but a probability, and that such a war would of necessity deeply affect the future of this nation. When the conflict first broke out last September, it was still my intention to announce clearly and simply at an early date that under no conditions would I accept re-election. This fact was well known to my friends, and I think was understood by many citizens. It soon became evident, however, that such a public statement on my part would be unwise from the point of view of sheer public duty. As President of the United States, it was my clear duty, with the aid of the Congress, to preserve our neutrality, to shape our program of defense to meet rapid changes, to keep our domestic affairs adjusted to shifting world conditions, and to sustain the policy of the good neighbor. It was also my obvious duty to maintain to the utmost the influence of this mighty nation in our effort to prevent the spread of war and to sustain by all legal means those governments threatened by other governments which had rejected the principles of democracy. Swiftly moving foreign events made necessary swift action at home and beyond the seas. Plans for national defense had to be expanded and adjusted to meet new forms of warfare. American citizens and their welfare had to be safeguarded in many foreign zones of danger. National unity in the United States became a crying essential in the face of the development of unbelievable types of espionage and international treachery. Every day that passed called for the postponement of personal plans and partisan debate until the latest possible moment. The normal conditions under which I would have made public declaration of my personal desires were wholly gone. And so, thinking solely of the national good and of the international scene, I came to the reluctant conclusion that such declaration should not be made before the National Convention. It was accordingly made to you within an hour after the permanent organization of this convention. Like any other man, I am complimented by the honor that you have done me. But I know you will understand the spirit in which I say that no call of party alone would prevail upon me to accept re-election to the presidency. The real decision to be made in these circumstances is not the acceptance of a nomination, but rather an ultimate willingness to serve.
When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled.
Stop that already!
Barack Obama is up early cooking breakfast in one of Michelle's extra-long t-shirts. The nation's sane people beg the nation's insane people to stop shooting them. And NASA calls it a mission as the Curiosity rover fills up its whole 2 gigabyte memory card. And now, the only weekly web video taped before a live and unsettlingly silent studio audience. This is the Onion Week in Review. Attendees at a Los Angeles gala today honored the Shining Star Foundation for its ongoing work with developmentally disabled celebrities. The prestigious foundation was celebrated for providing Hollywood's numerous mentally challenged actors, actresses, musicians, and television personalities with assistance in their daily lives. Whether it's driving them to movie studios, getting them dressed up for award ceremonies, or helping them pick out designer clothing.
You know, each of our A-listers has his or her own needs. Someone like Andy Garcia, for example, requires a little extra help with day-to-day activities like red carpet interviews. I've been working with Daniel Craig for the past few months, and he's made a lot of progress. He's actually using the bathroom all by himself now. You okay in there, Daniel? Oh, Jesus, Daniel.
Apparently oblivious of the dismal fiscal climate, local dog Digby is wolfing down kibble as if the United States isn't in a goddamn economic crisis. Sources say the shockingly selfish 4-year-old German Shepherd appears callously unswayed by the constant stream of gloomy market forecasts and continues gorging on brand-name pet foods, milk bones, and table scraps as if the U.S. unemployment rate hasn't been above 8% for the past 3 years.
Here we are tightening our belts while this dog scarfs down bowl after bowl like the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone through the goddamn roof or something. You'd think that he'd think twice since U.S. credit rating's been downgraded, but Digby doesn't give a damn. Ain't that right, Digby? You don't give a flying f*** do you?
Returning home from work Wednesday evening, paralegal Caitlin Levy was shocked to realize she had not been harassed, leered at, or made to feel physically threatened at any point in her day. The bewildered 28-year-old told reporters that even after carefully reflecting on the various times of the day when she is ordinarily subject to catcalls or gaped at by co-workers, she was unable to recall any incident that left her feeling humiliated or sexually degraded.
I don't know if it's something with me or what. I mean, I don't look any different today than I usually do. Or maybe something was coincidentally going on with every man I happen to pass or interact with, or... Ew. Okay, never mind. I just got a super gross email from my boss. What the fuck is this problem?
In this week's election news, Mitt Romney gets stuck in an endless loop of uncomfortable chuckling. In other news, now that he's heard of Barack Obama, a local man sees references to him all over the place. The nipple of a baby bottle is pierced for authenticity.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
American officials are investigating an oil spill in Wisconsin on an Enbridge pipeline. About 1,200 barrels of crude oil from Alberta leaked into a field. As Leah Hendry reports, this latest spill has many questioning the safety of a proposed pipeline here.
In the midst of an environmental review into the viability of the Northern Gateway pipeline to Canada's west coast from Alberta, news of another spill. This nearly 2 years to the day after a July 2010 rupture that led to more than 20,000 barrels of crude leaking into a Michigan river. That spill led to a scathing report of Enbridge's handling of the spill. This time, Enbridge officials say they were on top of it.
It represented an excellent example of the improvements that we've made over the last couple of years around areas of emergency response, public safety, around leak detection.
That doesn't reassure environmental groups and Native communities that have staunchly opposed the Northern Gateway pipeline proposal.
And I think the U.S. and Canadian authorities immediately suspend the Enbridge operating permits and licenses and conduct a full-scale inquiry into the operations and safety practices of the Enbridge Pipeline Corporation.
NDP leader Adrian Dix is heading to Terrace tomorrow to meet with Aboriginal leaders about the pipeline. For Dix, the Wisconsin spill shows yet again just how risky a BC pipeline could be.
This isn't in BC's economic interests or its environmental interests, and I think it shows the kind of folly of attempting to sacrifice the established economic environmental risks for BC.
The pipeline must pass the National Energy Board Joint Review Panel, which is currently underway. BC will get its chance to cross-examine Enbridge this fall.
We would need to be assured by the company and by the National Energy Board, by the authorities on the coast, that the systems were in place and that the company was able to minimize the risks and then respond to the risks appropriately without leaving the taxpayers with a problem.
The Joint Review Panel is expected to wrap up sometime in 2013.
Another major story we're following for you this morning. A Milwaukee County deputy who died in the line of duty will be laid to rest today. Deputy Sergio Aleman died last Tuesday when he crashed into the back of a tow truck on I-43. Here is a live look at St. Patrick's Church in Milwaukee. Memorial service for the deputy is set for today at 11 a.m., followed by a procession of squads. Visitation was last night in Franklin. Deputy Aleman leaves behind a wife and five children.
Since 9/11, Americans have been focused on the threat posed by international terror networks, the radical Islamists. But does the Wisconsin rampage signal a greater threat by domestic extremists? Listen to this. And Peter Bergeron, our national security analyst, is joining us here in the Situation Room. Peter, you wrote an important article on CNN.com suggesting that these homegrown white supremacist or neo-Nazi type terrorists are more of a danger to the United States than Al-Qaeda.
Stop exploiting the 9/11 tragedy!
This is also a moment that calls upon us to work for a world without violence. We know that the killings of Matthew Shepard, of David Byrd, of David Kato, of Trayvon Martin, and now the shootings of Sikh Americans in Milwaukee are all deeply connected to each other. It's all about combating a culture of violence against people who look different, against people who inspire hate and fear in others. It's about eclipsing that anger and fear with our love, our solidarity, and our support.
DHS, Department of Homeland Security, INA, which is the Office of Intelligence and Analysis at DHS, is concerned that right-wing extremists will attempt to recruit and radicalize returning veterans in order to boost their violent capabilities. You agree with that assessment?
I think that's a very legitimate concern. Think about Timothy McVeigh, an Army veteran who killed 168 Americans in Oklahoma City in 95. Wade Michael Page in Wisconsin on Sunday, a military veteran. I think that's a very legitimate concern.
So there's military training. Do you think some of these extremists, they go into the military to obtain the training and then go out and do what they want to do? Or they're, in effect, militarized by the military?
I don't want to hazard a guess on that one, Wolf. Obviously McVeigh had long left the military when he did Oklahoma City. Wade Michael Page also long left the military. But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
And again?
But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
And again?
But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
Of a Hollywood movie, but a group of veterans has filed a lawsuit against the CIA and U.S. Army claiming that the government planted remote control devices in their brains. The claims relate to a government program at the U.S. Army's Edgewood Arsenal in Maryland, where scientists tested hundreds of chemical and biological substances on at least 7,800 servicemen. So could this really be happening? Well, joining me to help discuss this is Dr. Colin Ross, president of the Colin A. Ross Institute for Psychological Trauma. Dr. Ross, tell me, is this really happening? Did the government really take part in mind control experiments on soldiers? What kind of stories have you heard from the survivors of these experiments? I know you've had access to thousands of documents from the CIA.
Well, it's just like you just said, there's two kind of streams of information. There's stories from survivors, and then there's the documents. So if I go to the documents first, they're very, very detailed, 15,000 pages plus. And we're starting back in 1950 with projects called Artichoke and Bluebird, which were then rolled over into MKUltra, which in turn was rolled over to MKSearch. And then all the documents stop in 1973. So in that era, 50 to 73, there's a whole host of different types of mind control experiments, hypnosis, LSD, special interrogation chambers, and brain electrode implants. And so there's projects in the CIA documents and in Army records where electrodes are put into dolphins, and the dolphins are directed by remote transmitter to deliver a bomb to a target. And there's a discussion of similar technology in cats and other animals. There's research funded by the Office of Naval Research published in mainstream journals where electrodes are put in the brains of cats, dogs, and their behaviors controlled, and even human beings at Harvard and Yale. So this is absolutely documented fact.
So tell me how commonplace this was. Is this, are we talking about one program that took place decades ago, or do you think it's happening more often than that? And if so, how could it be so secretive? I mean, most people would think this can't be true. This is stuff out of a movie.
Right. It was not just one program back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It was Harvard, Yale, Tulane, UCLA. So we know there was more than one university involved, more than one branch of the military, more than one program for a fact. What's going on currently, of course, is all classified. People tell you stories about it, but I can't actually prove that it's happening today. I'm certain that it is, but I can't prove it.
Okay, so did these people know what was happening to them? I mean, in a lot of the articles I've read, it seemed like they kind of volunteered to be part of some sort of experiment, right?
But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
And again?
But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
And again?
But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
Shortly after it became known that Wade Page was the Sikh temple shooter, Page's landlord said he thought the gunman was from Chicago. But nothing in Page's history indicated any Chicago addresses. Tonight, though, the Chicago connection seems to be Page's ex-girlfriend, Misty Cook.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
When the 40-year-old white supremacist stormed this Sikh temple on Sunday, he had only lived in Metro Milwaukee for a short time.
What has changed him, I have no idea, and obviously we're never going to know.
Wade Page, racist and white supremacist band leader, moved to this home in South Milwaukee in early June. He moved in with this woman, 31-year-old Misty Cook, seen here in a 2009 Cook County Sheriff's Department mugshot after she was arrested on DUI charges, according to authorities. At the time, Ms. Cook lived in this Northwest Side building, according to public records. A current resident here told the I-team she didn't know of Cook or of her relationship with the Sikh shooter. It is unclear whether Wade Page, the masked killer, lived here with her in Chicago or even knew her during the several years Cook lived on the Northwest Side. Cook and Page did apparently share a common enthusiasm for white power groups. In these web photos collected by the Anti-Defamation League, she is pictured with people associated with white supremacy organizations. After the Sikh attack, federal authorities found a handgun in her apartment, but there is no evidence or suggestion she had anything to do with the attack and that she had no contact with Page of late.
Shocking. I mean, I met him. Like I said, he seemed soft-spoken and quiet. I never had a lot of conversations with him other than, you know, with my daughter, and it's shocking.
That gun removed by police from the home that Misty Cook once shared with the Sikh temple shooter could be a problem for Ms. Cook. She cannot legally own a gun because she has a previous felony conviction. Police have not yet referred a gun charge against Cook for prosecution, according to state and federal officials. This is a story that seems to keep changing by the hour.
On State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things they don't do on Broadway. They have the time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago, Chicago, my hometown. Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I'll show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago. Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday could not shut down.
Happening tonight, President Obama raises campaign cash and takes a stroll near his Chicago home. About the same time, the Republican team that hopes to replace him and Vice President Biden hold a rally just up the road in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Good evening. I'm Stacey Baca. Karen and Ruby are off tonight. We'll have more about the Mitt Romney-Paul Ryan appearance in Ryan's home state in just a moment. But we're going to begin here in Chicago, where the president opened his home in Kenwood to campaign supporters tonight. ABC 7's Paul Meinke is there with the latest on a day for fundraising appearances by the president. Paul?
Stacey, the Obama campaign says it figures to be significantly outspent in the 86 days leading up to this election. So today was about raising money. Five separate fundraisers, three of them in the president's own Kenwood neighborhood here, and all of them designed collectively to raise on the order of $6 million. It's been a while since the president was home. Tonight, after raising some campaign cash, he went for a brief neighborhood stroll. A bit earlier at his Kenwood home, Mr. Obama hosted some 200 supporters who paid $40,000 a ticket to spend a bit of time with the president.
I've made it my business to be on the scene and supportive of him every opportunity that I've had.
Well, I think we have a decision to make as Americans, and that decision is a real choice.
Hello, Chicago! On State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things that they never do on Broadway. They have the time of their life. I saw a man and he danced with his wife in Chicago. 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 That's my hometown.
Good evening. Romney has two private fundraisers in downtown Chicago this evening.
Earlier today, Romney made a last-minute campaign stop at a business in Elk Grove Village. Some are asking, why would Romney spend the time campaigning in a state where President Obama is believed to hold a wide lead?
Here's ABC 7 political reporter Charles Thomas. Charles?
Ron, Cheryl, I'm told the plans for the campaign event in Elk Grove Village this morning were not finalized until late Sunday. Candidate Romney, whose core mission is to raise money today in the Chicago area, appeared at a manufacturing company to make his points about President Obama's handling of the economy.
President Obama is simply out of ideas, he's out of excuses, and Illinois needs to help me make sure that in November we put him out of office.
The Romney campaign this week rolled out what analysts say is a crucial strategy to winning the White House, attempting to keep as many members of their geriatric voting base alive until Election Day. With more, we're joined by Piper Cahill.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi there, Piper. So data shows a large percentage of Republicans are 60 and older. Obviously, in a tight race like this, keeping those voters breathing until they're able to cast their ballots could make or break Romney's campaign.
That's right, and that's why Romney is getting out there at nursing homes and retirement communities and telling these folks, look, I need you to just not die for a couple more months.
But Piper, it's an uphill battle in a lot of cases, isn't it? I mean, much of the Republican base is extremely old and feeble. Death would be a relief for them.
It would, that's true, and that's why Romney is working so hard right now to get out that message that if his supporters have clung to life this long against all odds, it would be a shame to let their bodies go now, so close to the election.
Well, I mean, that's what we've been seeing in his new campaign ads. Here's one that started playing in Florida this morning.
Mitt Romney understands senior citizens like you are tired, but you have one more task to accomplish before you shuffle off this mortal coil. Use your last bit of strength to pull the lever in the voting booth on November 6th. Then you can die. Mitt Romney needs you. America. needs you.
Now, of course, they're not just running these ads. A hospice in Ohio claims GOP staffers have been giving their elderly patients injections of steroids against their will, specifically racehorse steroids.
Yeah, okay, but Ohio is a swing state, Andrea. They have to use extra steps there, obviously.
Well, that's true. Fair is fair. And I suppose Romney campaign workers will be using gurneys to wheel dying elderly residents to voting booths like they did in the Florida primaries.
Of course.
Okay, but some critics suggest these elderly people would rather be spending their final moments with their families.
But Romney is encouraging them to do just that.
Good.
Republicans have been calling for voting centers to create booths large enough to accommodate a hospital bed, a nurse, up to six family members, so everyone can vote together as a family. In a few cases, funeral homes have actually been used as polling stations, so you can go directly from the voting booth to the casket.
Interesting. Now, Piper, is there any chance that these elderly voters Romney's keeping alive could actually end up voting for Obama instead?
The black candidate? No.
Okay. Well, all right, Piper, thank you so much for being with us. When we return, we'll talk about reports that presidential candidate Ron Paul is hiding somewhere in the White House.
Charlotte Nash was viciously mauled by her friend's chimpanzee back in 2009. She says the state of Connecticut knew the animal was dangerous and did nothing about it. As ABC's Brandi Hitt tells us, she needs to get approval to sue the state. And we warn you, some images in this story may be disturbing.
Charlotte Nash revealed her injuries in public for the first time since being severely mauled by her friend's chimpanzee 3 years ago. Now she's trying to move forward with a lawsuit against the state of Connecticut.
Charlotte today sits in a nursing home outside of Boston in total darkness, without eyes, without hands, without her face.
The state's claims commissioner must give the okay for Nash to sue the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, which allowed Nash's friend Sandra Harrell to keep Travis, a 200-pound chimp, as a pet. In 2009, Travis got loose and attacked.
He's killing my friend!
Who's killing your friend?
My chimpanzee!
Sharla barely survived the mauling.
I'd like to put across the people's minds that these exotic animals are very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And in this 2009 interview with Oprah Winfrey, she bravely exposed her injuries to the world.
The one simple fact is that had the state exercised its mandatory obligation to seize and dispose of this illegally possessed chimp, this accident would have never happened.
Whilst most athletes will be subject to drugs tests following an Olympic win, it's very likely none are checked for magic or divine tampering. In Mexico, however, nothing's being left to chance ahead of the country's Olympic football finals against Brazil. The country's chief warlock, Antonio Vazquez, has performed cleansing ceremonies to protect the team against Brazil's occult influences.
They are football fans, but they are always helping one another through magic. There are always warlocks, drums, shouts, and costumes present during games. In Brazil, I've been there. I realize there are groups day and night who help their team. Why not neutralize them? We have purer, original, and Mexican magic.
Meanwhile, in an unusual meeting of minds, the local Catholic Church is also getting involved, dressing up a statue of the miracle child in Mexican football kit and holding a special service to pray for gold.
I stopped watching the news years ago. It just was, I couldn't watch it anymore. The same reason why I stopped going to church. I was just like, this isn't what's going on. What they're telling me is a guess. I just don't buy into it, you know? Other than, that's why I like sports. I like watching ESPN. Because what they say is true, for the most part. The Phillies did win 2-1. There was 30,000 witnesses. They saw it happen. But that other shit, when you start telling me what's going on in Frankfurt or in Vienna or goddamn Cairo, I don't know. Is it? Is that what happened? Is that footage actually from that? From that place? Did that happen this week? Am I still going to keep asking questions? Will this ever end? I don't know.
And the internet introduces everybody, no matter how weird, no matter how marginalized, no matter how peculiar, to the fact that there are others like you. There are others like you. Find the others. Make common cause. Realize that it's the deals you cut and the friends you make that determine where you're going to be standing when the flash hits.
After Italian fishermen reported hauling pottery fragments in their nets, police divers investigated and found a 2,000-year-old sunken ship in the waters near the port of Genoa. It was located on the seafloor at 60 to 70 metres by an automated underwater rover. The shipwreck contained hundreds of amphorae, better known as clay jars. They would have been used for shipping oil, olive oil, wine and other food products. The police scuba unit says the upper part contains fragments of the jars damaged by fishing, and they've only recovered one. But they believe the lower section of the wreck is intact and contains several hundred jars. It's likely the ancient containers are still sealed and could allow scientists to study the content of the cargo. The ancient ship is being monitored and protected.
To learn, to be taught, and to teach. And there's Veronica, she's biting her lip as she watches the waves turn white at the tip. And there's Veda, radiating with joy, and luckily she still can't stand the sight of a boy. Dances in the wind and he's wondering what love is and why it has to end. And he can't understand how everyone goes on breathing when true love ends. His mother whispers quietly, heaven's not a place that you go when you die. It's that moment in life when you actually feel alive. So live for the moment and take this advice. Live by every word. Love is just a hoax, so forget anything that you have heard. Live for the moment now.
A beautiful landscape with a sad story. A dead humpback whale stranded in a seaside swimming pool near Sydney. Authorities said rough seas and a high tide washed the 12-metre-long, 30-tonne humpback whale over a safety fence and into the pool at Newport Beach. Shona Lorigan from the Organisation for the Rescue and Research of Cetaceans has a word of warning for the public.
Because we don't know how it's died, we don't know what kind of fluids, what kind of disease might be floating around with the animal, so we really need to make sure that everybody stays well clear.
But that hasn't stopped the whale drawing in the crowds as they gathered nearby. Newport Beach is currently closed as there's still the risk that the carcass will attract sharks. Authorities hope the whale will float out of the pool on the next high tide.
growing on the beach. They were eager to learn, to be taught, and to teach. And there's Veronica, she's licking her lips as she waits for her real first passionate kiss. And there's Veda, she can't admit her jealousy of her sister Veronica, and how she's so pretty,
and how she's so pretty.
And lastly there's Dade, still sitting on the dock. He ponders his life and he skips his rocks, and he wonders when his father will return. But he's not coming back, and he can't understand how everyone goes on breathing when true love ends. His mother whispers quietly, heaven's not a place that you go when you die. It's that moment in life when you actually feel alive. So live for the moment and take this advice. Live by every word. Love is just a hoax, so forget everything that you have heard.
Terrifying scenes off the coast of Western Australia as a fisherman becomes stranded in shark-infested waters.
He's stark naked in the water below us at the moment, just struggling to swim and sort of float on his back.
The 49-year-old was spotted being circled by sharks, at least one of which was a hammerhead, by a news crew in a helicopter.
We've just spotted a massive hammerhead shark that is just circling around him, probably about 20 metres from him.
The man, who'd been treading water for 20 hours after his boat sank, was eventually pulled to safety and flown to hospital in Perth.
He's slowly trying to...
He can't move.
He's slowly trying to breaststroke, not even moving in the water, and there's a guy reaching out from the side of the boat now, about to sort of clasp hands with him. Any second now, they've got a rope out of the water. He's got the rope, and they've just pulled him onto some stairs. Finally, after all this, he's actually safe.
He had been on the trip with two other men, one of whom was later found unconscious and did not survive, with the other still being reported as missing.
To learn, to be taught, and to teach. But the sad thing is that they never live past the age of 15 due to neglect from their mother, who was bedridden by her ex-lover and their father. Didn't even notice or pay much attention as the tide came in and swept her three into the ocean. Now all her advice, it seems useless. Well, heaven's not a place that you go when you die. It's that moment in life when you touch her and you feel alive. Advice, live by every word. Love's completely real, so forget anything that you have heard. Live for the moment now.
You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window, or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. What truth? That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
Humanity is, for the first time in history, becoming consciously awake. Education, information, and dispelling myths allows people to logically look at their world, to shake off the chains that hold them back from finding true happiness. Humanity is tackling issues that have plagued their families for generation after generation. Humanity is learning that they no longer need to be cursed with toxic thoughts that destroy self-esteem and relationships. There is a massive movement toward self-realization, whether it is through spirituality, meditation, nutrition, exercise, self-help, life balance, or psychotherapy. Humanity finally has the tools and information to finally conquer these inner demons that hold us individually down. With this access to information, help, and healing, this generation is tackling their issues and saying, "It stops with me." They will not pass this toxic thoughts onto their children so that they can be their highest and best selves. This, to me, is true generational wealth. Once humanity starts becoming more free in their consciousness, the chain reaction starts ripping through every other aspect of their life. No longer will they put up with abusive, manipulative, and toxic personal relationships. Toxic wives, abusive boyfriends, manipulative bosses, and even rude strangers will no longer be tolerated. Humanity will learn that we do not need to fight these people. They merely need to be identified and exposed so that we may shun them in our lives forever. Once the social parasite is exposed, they will no longer have the control over that newly awakened person, and they will wither away in their current power. The newly freed person will feel an incredible weight lifted off their chest and truly be able to breathe for the very first time. Once they tackle those toxic relationships, it is now time to rid themselves of careers and efforts that do not resonate with their now stirring soul. We all resonate energy, and when we find people or music that vibrates with our energy, we literally get a shiver down our spine. That is our soul or our consciousness telling us that this is real and right, and that we need to be fully present in this moment. We should be searching for these moments in everything we do, but we are held back from it by people who seek to manipulate your energy into their collective efforts for their personal power. When we are surrounded by people or things that do not resonate with us, we feel a dissonance, a sickness in the stomach. We cannot give our best energy to things we do not believe or feel passionate about. Most careers in this debt and death paradigm do not resonate with us, because we are feeding a collective beast that does not care about us or our happiness. We currently have millions of Americans on antidepressants or other forms of active denial as a way to cover up the sick feeling that they are not getting anywhere in their life. The secret to happiness is making real progress. Think about when you were most happy. It was probably when you were a child. Every day there was progress and opportunities seem everywhere. You were told that you can be anything, and you probably had a healthy family structure to provide the encouragement to do more. Your potential was encouraged to take action, which led to results, which leads to certainty, which leads to the confidence to take on any challenge. It is important to note that happiness is not an exponential scale. Take a man who is cold and hungry, and maybe minus 100 happy, and if you give him a warm bed and hot soup, he may become plus 100 happy. But if you give that same man $1 billion, he does not become plus 1 billion happy. We have been fooled into thinking that the collection of dollars or status in some system is the measure for happiness. After we progress ourselves to a point where we can sustain ourselves without fear, the only other happiness you will find in life is being a blessing onto others to reach that same level. Humanity will realize that when this dollar paradigm collapses, that most of their time and energy has been wasted on things that have absolutely no importance to our lives. We have sold our soul every day to do things that did not materially make the world better or bring happiness into other lives. The majority of humanity will be asking what was their life all about when the prosperity built on debt is collapsed. To those that cannot live with toxic thoughts, toxic people, and toxic careers, they will no longer be able to waste another day digging at that empty hole in their soul. They will make the decision to leave that high-paying job and to follow that small voice inside of them. They will realize that the things that they thought they needed are no longer important. And because they no longer desire the latest and greatest, life immediately becomes less intensive and demanding. They are able to support themselves and others with less effort. A greater calm will come over them as they wonder why they did not do this sooner.
But don't worry, we're all going to be living on nothing soon enough. And, you know, with a little bit of help from our friends, maybe, just maybe. I don't know. I have no idea.
Last time I'm gonna look at you.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.